Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is the TS Radio Network. Tonight, we are talking Wisconsin. Again, another big guardianship case, and we'll be getting to that in just a few minutes. Co-hosting with me is Cosmas Wittenscaife, and we are looking like we are having some kind of trouble hooking up here. So I can't figure out what's happening here. Cos, you may have to call back in. Allison, you also, it looks like this isn't hooking up like it's supposed to. So if you could call back in, I'd appreciate it. Okay, here we go. Let's see if we got it this way. 303, I don't know who this is. This is, something's messing up here. Okay. I am not sure what is happening here. Okay. Let's see if we can get Cos up that way. Something is happening. Okay. Yeah, everybody is calling back in. I'm not sure what's happening here. But to get us started here, what we're going to be talking about is a case that came up out of Wisconsin today and was in court today, and it's about Marion Rosler, I believe is the correct way to say her name, and she lived in Portage Community, and she was a leader there for decades, and now lives in Divine Savior Hospital as a hostage of Wisconsin's denounced guardianship system, in which Marion has languished for years after Judge Brian Pitzinger appointed corporate guardians of Northeast Wisconsin to control all of Marion's millions of dollars in assets. And now we know why Marion is a hostage. In addition to Marion's millions of dollars in assets, corporate guardians of Northeast Wisconsin and also controls all of Marion's social and familial contacts. Let me see if I can get my girls back up here. Okay. Okay, Cos?
Yep. Can you hear me?
Okay, gotcha. Yes, gotcha.
Awesome.
Hang on here and let me see if I can get it. Okay, Allison, gotcha?
Yep, I'm here. Can you hear
awesome.
Me?
Awesome.
Okay, all right. Yeah, fine. Great.
Yay.
Phew, thanks for back in. I've been having a little bit of trouble again here lately. I don't know why. So what is happening to this lady is, she is being dispossessed of all of her millions of dollars in assets. She's being kept alive until her estate can be totally depleted by corporate guardians of Northeast Wisconsin. And she is not allowed to see her family, have any social contacts, and nobody can know what her health care is or isn't. Reports are that she has bruises, gashes, and other signs of physical abuse. As shown in photographs, she's been found covered in feces. These are usually the charges they make in probate tribunals when they claim that the person needs their protection, but they never have to produce any evidence. But when you, as a volunteer person trying to defend this person from these predators, says, wait a minute, I've got evidence, this is what they're doing, you can't present that to the court. They won't hear it. They won't have it. Okay, so we're going to be talking about that. But I want to make something clear as we get started here tonight. I've had a lot of people talking about how we need jury trials. How come we don't get jury trials when somebody is drug into probate? The first question you need to be asking is, How does the live person get taken into probate? Probate is to become active only upon presentation of the death certificate. You have an obviously still living person. The de facto death certificate is that fraudulent guardianship. You have been declared civilly dead. Now then, why are you not in a court of law? Which a tribunal is not a court of law. It's a fictional construct of statutes, codes, and regulations specifically erected to deprive you of your rights, your constitutional protections, and this allows that probate hearing examiner or ministerial clerk, these are not judges of the law, to allow your identity to be stolen from you and given to someone else. And along with it, all of your assets, all of your rights, any pre-existing legal instruments are immediately discarded. So don't be sucked into one of these estate planning programs, because I guarantee you they aren't worth the paper they're written on, and there isn't an attorney selling you one of these plans that doesn't know it's a fraud from one end to the other. They aren't worth anything. What you've done is listed out everything you own, where it's at, how much it's worth, who has access to it. And now we got the goods. First thing that examiner asks the predatory guardian and their attorney is, have all the assets been marshaled? Are you sure you got everything? And this is, they usually go to these papers, and then they say, well, we decided you're incapacitated. So if you are incapacitated today, you must have been 20 years ago when you erected these estate plans. So I'm discarding all these legal instruments, and I'm handing your identity, all your rights, and your assets over to the guardian and the attorney, who have never seen you, couldn't pick you up out of a one-person lineup, couldn't pick you out. And they are allowed to stand and make any charges they wish without any evidence whatsoever. But the reason you cannot have a civil or criminal trial is no charges have been filed. There is no injured party. There has been no crime committed. And because none of these things have happened, you cannot get into a court of law where the code of evidence has to be followed, the rules on evidence, and the code of civil procedure have to be followed. And that person bringing those charges against you must produce their evidence in front of a jury to determine if what they are saying is true, and that penalty needs to be assessed, such as going to jail. So we avoid all of that. We create these fictional, phony tribunals, and we deprive you of your rights, of your identity, of your assets, with no evidence needed, asked for, or ever provided, and none being allowed in to refute the charges being made. But this is why you can't get into a court of law. Actually, that person acting as a hearing examiner or ministerial clerk has only actually one job, and that's a finding of fact. Is there enough here to warrant going into court civilly? They never make that determination. They deprive you of your rights, and you get stashed in one of these god-awful warehouses that they call a nursing home, and immediately isolated. Statutes in every state say you cannot isolate. Immediately isolated. You can't see your family, your friends. You can't make phone calls. You can't be visited by church members. You can't be visited by your minister, your priest, your rabbi. You can't be visited by anyone. And you are left in a state of neglect and abuse that is, honest to God, the stuff of nightmares in many, many cases. Now, this is what's going on. And here we have this lady in Wisconsin who has endured this for years, for committing the new age crime of aging with millions of dollars in assets that somebody else decided they ought to have. And with that cause, I'm going to get off my soapbox and let you pick this up.
Well, thank you so much, Marty. We missed, I know I got many, we're starting to get a following. I got many messages that people missed us the last couple weeks. As you know, I'm a baker. I had to do Mother's Day. And so people are excited that we're back on. We had a great show planned to expose potholes. But all of a sudden, because I live in Wisconsin, even though all my legal stuff's going on in Pennsylvania, this story Allison brought it to my attention, and the Oddholes are going to get a week off. I bet they're very happy about that, but we have not forgot about them. But we are now going to focus on Wisconsin. I am the Wisconsin liaison for NASGA, and I have often had many, many people come to me to tell me their stories. And what happens, Marty, is I hear the story, and it's very sad. And there's never a legal document that can be produced to me. I know with NASGA, I believe they just ask for docket numbers when you want to, like, enroll your story. I mean, we can't get docket numbers. So I felt that we were living in a pretty good state. I know they rotate probate judges in Wisconsin. It's one of the positive things that they do. I was getting excited to grow old in Wisconsin, Marty. And then I found out about this. I found out about 10 o'clock this morning, and Allison brought it to my attention because of the advocacy of social media. And I think Allison and I have known each other for almost 30 years. And we saw each other. She thought of me. She's a Facebook friend. She's been seeing what I've been posting. She is super passionate about what's going on in Wisconsin, not just in guardianship, but in some other areas. And we're going to talk about that since today is Wisconsin. And when she told me about this, we sprung into action. I mean, everyone's caring. But Marty, this is the first case in the state of Wisconsin that I have heard of that actually is going to be able to produce a court document. They were in court today at 9 o'clock. I do not know how it ended. I'm assuming that the court, I know I've sat in these stupid hearings, and they can drag on for 2 days in probate court because the lawyers are billing by the hour. So these things don't get over really fast. So there was a disturbing bill that passed in Wisconsin in 2015. It was Senate Bill 487. It was what, and you know, I warned about it. We warned about it, and now here it is. It was what's called a Trojan horse bill. It sounded really good.
Yes.
You have people in Hollywood telling their sob story, and then they come in and they want to pass these visitation bills. And this one, of course, I want to say I love the Catherine Falk bills, but this was not a Catherine Falk bill. Too bad. It should have been. But what happens is in this Trojan horse bill, 2015 Senate Bill 487, it is putting people into probate court. Basically, it sounds like it's this visitation bill that's going to be all warm and fuzzy. But basically what you did is you just allowed the vultures to start to circle the minute that you go and try and enact in these things, in these petitions. And, I mean, I guess I'll read letter B. Visitation between the petitioning adult child and the resident is not in the best instance of the interest of the resident. So that means a judge has to decide if you visiting your loved one is in the best interest of the resident. And there is your smoking gun in that bill, because now the judge is going to decide with no jury of your peers. And that's,
exactly.
I believe that was an unfortunate situation that happened here in Wisconsin, and now they're putting it to good use. I had heard that there was some lawyers that came from, you know, the Hollywood area and were doing big, like, they thought it was so wonderful being, doing like seminars with elder law attorneys. And it seems like there's some ties to the Church of Scientology that's behind this. And this is an unfortunate situation, and we have a real-life now example of the damage that is now going to be done in the state of Wisconsin, because I'm really excited to hear how this court hearing ended, but I have a feeling that it's going to end the same way that, like, they do in Pennsylvania, because now they have all
yes.
the tools, they have these new laws. I would love to be wrong. I would love to think that there's enough still hope in Wisconsin, but the fact that these sorts of laws got passed in Wisconsin, and that we had these elder law, you know, training classes going on in the state of Wisconsin
right.
with some Scientology lawyer, that doesn't make me think that it's going to be a very happy ending. And that's why we need to start talking about this. We need to start educating. And Allison is one big voice in the state of Wisconsin. She's so passionate about our state. And when she heard that this now just happened in our state, she's ready to spring into action because she's the girl who knows all the advocacy groups in Wisconsin on so many other levels, and we just probably added more to your plate, Allison.
Well, I'm really, first of all, Marty and Kaz, thank you so much for having me on tonight's show. This is really exciting. I will do anything I can to get the word out about issues like this. I personally am coming from a space of medical freedom. In fact, we just had a rally on last Saturday, May 18th, under the leadership of the Wisconsin United for Freedom. And our do a plug for WisconsinUnitedForFreedom.org. And this is our first ever rally in Wisconsin. And we are a group of parents, mothers, fathers, that are seeking to have to be able to continue our right to informed consent. And what we mean by that is we want to be able to have the choice as parents to decide what vaccines, or if any, and when to give those vaccines to our children. As we know, there is a national movement, a push by the pharmaceutical industry lobbyists to remove our right to informed consent by removing any philosophical or religious exemptions to vaccinations. And even the medical exemption is not safe because California right now, it's already moved through committee, it's already passed the Senate, now it's going to go to the Assembly, that they have an actual exemption to remove the doctor-patient relationship, the ability to actually write a medical exemption by doctors being removed. So if you're a parent and you want to send your child to school, you would have to ask for a medical exemption from the public health department. And these are people that are sitting up on their ivory towers that have never met your child. They don't have any clinical experience. They've never met your child. They don't look at the family history. And when they look at the CDC, the list of, list of contraindications to exempt your child from vaccinations, it's literally whether you have had an anaphylactic shock to one said specific vaccine. So you can only get an exemption for that specific vaccine, not for any other vaccine. And even if you had a sibling that has been deceased or injured by a vaccine, that's not good enough. So, I mean, putting the power into an office paper pusher is just unbelievable. So if people think that the philosophical exemption, and in Wisconsin right now, because of a woman named Marge Grant, her son, she was from Beaver Dam. Her son, Scotty Grant, in 1961, was permanently brain damaged by the DPT vaccine. And so in 1983, when Scotty was 22, Marge successfully lobbied the Wisconsin legislature to give us our three exemptions. So the three exemptions that exist in Wisconsin are because of Marge Grant. The law should actually be called Marge Grant, Marge Grant's law. So Marge Grant, unfortunately, she passed away in 2012. I just created a Facebook page for her to keep her voice alive. It's called the Marge Grant Society. And she has a book. I only have a few copies. It's called A Stolen Life, and it lays out everything that she suffered through. She turned her home into a place to care for her son. She refused to institutionalize him. Scotty requires 24/7 care, and I'm very grateful. I mean, I am very grateful for Marge Grant because I wouldn't have been able to get a medical exemption for my children, after their vaccine injury, even though I have plenty of proof and family history that would provide enough to say I have a contraindication to not vaccinate my children. But unfortunately, doctors don't want to write those exemptions. And so, you as a parent, you are the only thing standing between the pharmaceutical industry and your child, because you've got them coming at you, whether it's at the school, the television, the magazines, the doctor's office, the side of school buses. I mean, it's just an all-on onslaught by the pharmaceutical industry to inject your child. And the crazy thing is that Marge Grant passed her law in Wisconsin in 1983, and then obviously we know what happened in 1986, the pharmaceutical industry, because a lot of people, Marge Grant was on the Phil Donahue show in 1982, and so a lot of people were like, oh my God, what happened to your son Scotty is exactly what happened to my child, and you could sue the vaccine manufacturer back then. So the vaccine manufacturers were getting a lot of lawsuits, and they were going bankrupt. So they went to Congress and said, we're going to stop manufacturing vaccines unless you can protect us with a liability shield. Well, Congress, you know, went into action and passed the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986, signed by Ronald Reagan. Now, that granted a complete liability shield to any death or injury caused by a vaccine. And the law itself, Mary Holland, a New York University law professor, she wrote a review on the law, and she came out and said not only does this give the pharmaceutical industry and the entire medical establishment a liability shield, but it also prevents them from actually giving us the truth about the serious adverse reactions that you could get from the vaccination. So you only get what's called a vaccination information statement when you go to the doctor's office. It says, oh, you may get a fever, you may get a swelling, but that's it. They don't tell you you could get the Guillain-Barré syndrome, you could get the measles, you could get encephalitis, you could die. You know, they don't tell you the true. I mean, and if you look at the adverse reactions, which the only way you could look find that is to pull out the 25-page vaccine,
circular,
the pharmaceutical packaging. Yeah, this is the pharmaceutical packaging insert, and read the contraindications and read the adverse reactions. And all the vaccine inserts state, section 13.1, that these toxic vaccines have never been tested for mutagenic or carcinogenic properties, including they've never been tested on pregnant women, which I cannot even believe that they're injecting pregnant women now with the Tdap shot and the flu shot. So, I mean, there's just, it's no matter how you look at it, we don't have informed consent when it comes to vaccinations. So looking at it from the perspective of Wisconsin, we right now there is a bill circulating in Wisconsin. It was looking for co-sponsors. It's mainly, it's looking for co-sponsors, but it's to remove the philosophical exemption. And so we cannot let any exemption be touched. We cannot budge not one inch, because if the philosophical is removed, next year it will be the religious. And once the religious is moved, then the medical will be removed, because that's exactly what happened in California. So we've already seen the playbook.
Allison,
go ahead,
out
Marty.
There in California, that Senator Pan that has been pushing all this mess has five children, none of which are vaccinated. He won't allow them to be vaccinated. And the same, and the same legislators that are pushing this are hiding little things in these bills that they may exempt themselves and their offspring from these vaccinations. Just like when they passed Obamacare, Congress exempted themselves from it, and we pay their golden fleece insurance. Congress is also exempt from these vaccines. Have you seen anything come out about Congress being mandated to take vaccines? And you have 535 House of Representatives meeting at one time. Has anybody stood up and said, we all need to be fully vaccinated? Are you up on your vaccine schedules? We need to make a law to make sure we all are. You ever heard that? No. No.
No,
and
but
I'll tell
I
you
agree.
Something
That's
else
what needs
on
to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Nursing homes. There is a movement afoot. We're watching this, tracking this, and it's already happening in a few places down in Florida, some down in Texas, some out in California, where they are making it mandatory that if you are put in a nursing home for any reason, you must be fully vaccinated, and they will vaccinate you with as many vaccines. There is a surcharge attached to every vaccine. It can be as little as $2.35. It can be as much as $35, and they get a kickback. That money is what is collected by the vaccine company, this surcharge, and that money is supposed to go to that vaccine liability court to pay the lawsuits for vaccine injury. The vaccine manufacturer collects that. Before that vaccine court gets one dime, they write off their bookkeeping, their administrative expenses, their this expense, that expense, and you end up getting a penny on the dollar going into that court to pay for damages. The rest of it is footed by taxpayers. And we are paying for this. The elderly people, 2010, you talk about pregnant women and the elderly. 2010, they were pushing, that we were going to have a flu pandemic. Oh, it was terrible, terrible. The flu virus mutates so fast that they can't keep up with it. So any vaccine that comes out is based on mutated viruses from 2 to 3 years previous. That strain doesn't even exist anymore. And they shot all these elderly people full of this flu vaccine that, you know, because you're really at risk if you're elderly, and the mortality rate in the elderly shot through the roof. And this came right from the CDC. Pregnant women who got conned into taking that shot, if you're pregnant, you need to get the flu shot, a 2,300% increase in miscarriages. But they said, well, you know, that happens. That happens. This is, people need to understand, these shots are not about getting you healthy, keeping you healthy, herd immunity, anything else. These shots are intended, and this is my strict opinion after years of tracking this crap, this is to reduce fertility, to eventually produce a non-reproducing population. I think it is responsible for many changes in our DNA. All shots from ages 0 to 5 years old, every one of them that they give these babies, contain human diploid cells. They're called HEK cells, capital H, capital E, capital K. And they have a number attached to them. That is the number of aborted female fetuses it took to create a successful cell line. Your child is getting up to 1 million strands of someone else's DNA, not to mention the DNA of non-related species. It can be pig, chicken, monkey, dog, whatever ran through the lab that day. The first time they clocked this was in the Sabine and Salk polio vaccines back in the 60s, simian virus 40. They were microphaging the cell line through the ground-up lungs of great apes who carry this virus, simian virus 40, known to cause cancer in humans, doesn't bother the great apes. And they predicted 60 years later we would see an epidemic of soft tissue cancers in people 60 and older, and that is exactly what we've got. And so much so that mortuaries and morgues across the country have been ordered not to collect information on people who come in and show no signs of outward, you know, distress as having been the cause of death, and they are not to collect any information on soft tissue cancers they find on autopsy if they've got a history of polio vaccine. I'm telling you, this stuff is not at all what they are selling it to be. I'm not sure what the purposes are. I can speculate all day long, but knowing that they view us all as lab rats and as exposable, expendable, I'm sorry, no. And now, like I say, they're going to extend this, Allison, to our elderly that get trapped in these damn nursing homes. And they're going to load them up with these vaccines. You're going to see the elderly dropping like flies from the overload of aluminum, formaldehyde, polysorbate 80, all sorts of heavy metals, whatever else they threw in that crap, along with all these mutated viruses. They just sterilized 500,000 Kenyan children with a tetanus shot. Tetanus is not contagious. Tetanus is an infection you can get. They gave them tetanus shots, and somebody put something in there that caused them to go sterile. They sterilized this just happened in the last few months, 500,000 children in Nigeria. They crippled 48,000 Nigerian children with the polio vaccine. In India, close to 60,000 children either dead or permanently paralyzed with what they now call acute flaccid paralysis. It's not polio. It's acute flaccid paralysis, which is the definition of polio. But it's the vaccine-induced polio, far more virulent than the wild strain. India has stopped all vaccinations, is suing the Gates Foundation over this. For God's sake, people, get a clue. This has nothing to do with your health or keeping your child healthy. This is a massive global experiment, and they are killing our children, if not permanently injuring them. And think about that the next time your doctor says, well, your child really needs this shot. You take it first. Let's see how you do. I'm sorry. Got off on a rant there. I'll shut up. Get off my box. Okay, are you two talking now?
Yeah, well, I appreciate, Marty, I didn't know going into this phone call what it would be like, and you never know when you meet somebody how much they know. And it sounds like you know as much as I do, if not more, about the vaccine debacle that we're dealing with. I mean, we at the rally, it was one of the most impactful speeches at the rally at the Capitol last Saturday was a teenager. Her name is Ashlyn Brill, and her mother and her came and spoke at the Wisconsin United for Freedom rally. And Ashlyn, 1 year ago, got the HPV vaccine. So she was a healthy, precocious, very, very into sports. Healthy, active, I mean, just you name it. And the doctor said, time for your HPV. And, mother said, looked at Ashlyn and trusted her mom, and mom trusted the doctor, and they went and got the HPV vaccine. And since that time, Ashlyn has been extremely ill, and it went from a high fever to headaches to unending seizures. She's had hundreds and hundreds of seizures over the last year, and they last for hours. She's missed an enormous amount of school. She can't, do normal things that teenagers do because she can't leave her mother's sight. She's been in the hospital several times, weeks at a time. She's had numerous emergency room visits. So that's just one teenager. I know another mother in Wisconsin, her daughters, I should say, they're about 1 year apart, they got the HPV vaccine at age 9. When they started going through puberty at age 13, they both realized that they had premature ovarian failure. Like you were saying, they're sterile. They'll never be able to carry their own baby. So mom went and hired Dr. Yehuda Schoenfeld from Israel to represent them at the vaccine compensation court, went through all this work to go through that bureaucracy, through that court process, just to have her claim completely denied because it was past the three-year statute of limitations. So there's so many bureaucratic loopholes for them not to pay your case. And on top of that, if they know for a fact, even if your child was killed by a vaccine, the max death compensation that they'll pay you for a child lost is $250,000. That's the price tag that they put on a child's life. So, I mean, people have got to wake up to these. They should be called what they are, which is they are lethal injections. And this is about profit. This is nothing to do about health. This is about satisfying the insatiable greed of the pharmaceutical industry stockholders. That's all they want is they want their money and they want it now. And a healthy person is not a profit center. They're not a profit center for Big Pharma. We're looked at as commodities. And one of our members from our organization just recently went to the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, which happens three times a year at the CDC in Atlanta, Georgia. And Congress, and somehow in their infinite wisdom, said we need to open this meeting up to the public because they saw that there was a lot of egregious stuff going on there. So there, you look at a video on YouTube. Here you are sitting a bunch of people. They look like they're with the military. And you think about the Public Health Department. They are a quasi-military organization. That's why it's the Surgeon General. Yes. And so vaccines are actually classified legally as biologics. They're not classified as medicines. Yes. And I learned this from Robert Kennedy Jr. because the vaccines being classified as biologics, under the military, they can move very rapidly and get approval because if, God forbid, there was a biological warfare, the way that you would work with a biological warfare, biological weapon, is with a vaccine. So vaccines can get very rapid approval process. They don't have to go through the same testing that a pharmaceutical medicine would have to go through. So vaccines are only subject, and I learned this from Marge Grant as well, they're only subject to post-market data analysis. So they have a said vaccine, it gets approved. After it's been approved, then they study it, say 5 or 10 years, and they look at what the adverse reactions are. And even so, they still don't make any changes to the schedule. The only way a change is made to the CDC recommended schedule is if there's public pushback. The only reason that Marge Grant vaccine, the DPD, the whole cell pertussis vaccine was changed to the acellular pertussis is because there was a giant pushback from the public. But since that time, the media has been taken away from us. All these media organizations are 70% of their advertising revenue are pharmaceutical advertising. And they know that they do that. They like this direct-to-consumer pharmaceutical advertising because it gives them the ability to control the messaging. If they don't like a message that's being talked about, they will go in there and threatened to remove their advertising revenue. So every Newsweek, U.S. News, Cosmopolitan, Redbook, MSNBC, CNN, you name it, they're all owned by Big Pharma. So our Congress is owned by Big Pharma. Our media is owned by Big Pharma. The only thing left is things like this podcast, social media, and Adam Schiff goes and talks to Facebook and Interest and Pinterest and Instagram and you name it, and they want to shut us down. They want to shut down political speech because this is the last avenue of getting the word out there. So these type of shows are critical for us to reach the tipping point. We have to keep sharing this message. You're not going to hear this message on the news. You're not going to hear this message on the side of a bus. You're not going to hear this message from the public health department, even though in New Hampshire they had on the news, the first measles cases in New Hampshire, the woman at the church came right out and said, the parents contacted us, and they did say the child was just vaccinated. So here you have a child that was just vaccinated that has a case of the measles, but somehow they're not a public health threat. Like, they always twist the message. So, you know, it's a live virus vaccine. Yes, you can get the measles from the measles vaccine, and yes, you can shed the measles when you receive the measles vaccine.
Yes.
That's why it says on the door of the NICU, do not enter if you have recently received a vaccine. Because live virus vaccines can shed and spread the disease. So it's not the non-vaccinated that's spreading the disease. It is the vaccine, the recently vaccinated individuals. It's the pharmaceutical industry that's spreading the infections. It's not the non-vaccinated.
Yes.
They are healthy. And then they're trying to come at us to say that healthy non-vaccinated students can be segregated and removed from the public school, but yet those same there's a constitutional protection that says you cannot remove a child with AIDS or hepatitis B or a communicable disease from being removed from the classroom. So how do they think they can remove a healthy individual from the classroom? I mean, where do they think this is going? How are they going to segregate society? Are we going to have vaccinated versus non-vaccinated water fountains? Are we going to have vaccinated versus non-vaccinated playgrounds or malls or movie theaters or buses or airplanes? I mean, where is this going? I don't know.
Well, exactly. I don't either. I want to add one thing to this talk, and then we need to move on here. France, Israel, and Japan have all banned the HPV vaccine, citing massive costs to public health and the decline in girls' health, including death, from the HPV vaccine, and yet we are still pushing this damn vaccine on girls. And now we're doing it on boys, too. And now they're going to start testing Gardasil on newborn babies. Go figure. Anyway, the next thing I want to talk about is I want to move back to guardianship here a little bit. And every time one of these bills comes out on the federal level, you always, when you go to the federal page on it, what is it, Thomas Document Library, whatever the hell that is, and you go there, and it says, all actions on this bill. Punch that button and look at the first action. Where did that bill go first? It went to the Energy and Commerce Committee. Are you energy? No. So you must be commerce. Now, why would bills regarding human life be going to the Commerce Committee? Because we are commodities. We have been commodified, and they are buying, selling, and trading us, and through guardianship, they are robbing us blind, disinheriting future generations, and they are making a ton of money. That one person in guardianship, the attorneys are making money off of them. I think I've said this many times, it is one of the most insidious systems ever devised. You go against a person who has committed no crime, a person you don't even know. You claim a problem where there is none. You claim illness where none exists. And for some reason, you get to steal that person's identity and all their assets. Now, the guardian is making money because there's no caps on how much they can take, and the estate has to pay that guardian. The attorney is making money, and the estate has to pay that attorney. I've likened this to having to pay the rope they're going to hang you with.
Yeah.
Let's add in the medical profession. They bill Medicare out of $60 billion a year. What's Congress's response to this? They're going to cut benefits to the claimants. It isn't the claimants. Claims are down on Medicare. They're down. So how is there a $60 billion fraud? It's padded billing, billing for services never rendered, surgeries that weren't needed, medications never delivered, medications never needed, therapies, you name it, whatever, double, triple, and quadruple billing. And if you call CMS and try to report on the fraud hotline that you realize this has happened and you have a bill showing that they are doing this, their response is, well, what do you want us to do? Well, we're paying you to look into this fraud, and I've got evidence here to prove. Well, I don't know what you expect us to do. Why are we paying you again? And but this is what's taking place. So not only is the medical industry making a killing, then you got the nursing home, who's short-staffing to increase their bottom line, is many times caught abusing, neglecting, and absolutely tormenting these elderly people. They're making money. They're charging sometimes $6,000 to $10,000 a month. Here in Minnesota, thanks to Governor Pawlenty, who was governor during Bush-Cheney crime syndicate, made it a law here that if you go into a nursing home, of course, you're on Social Security. $150 off your Social Security is scraped off the top immediately and goes straight into the state treasury just because you were in there. That's every month as long as you live. Okay? You've got all these people with their fingers in the pie. You are an absolute cash cow. And even if you don't have any assets, the funding that comes in through Health and Human Services and Title 20, Social Security, block grants, is massive. That one individual can be worth a few million once they're caught in this system. And everybody is picking the corpse. Everybody is making money. And they will not let you go till it's done. But let's go back to that bill. How that landed in the Commerce Committee. People, when I've said that about we're commodities, oh, Marty, you're exaggerating. Please explain to me why we would go into, are we in commerce? Are we a commodity? We must be. Why else would we be in commerce? It is from there sent down to a subcommittee, like the Committee on Aging, who meets regularly, and does a lot of talking and produces absolutely nothing. I don't know where this is going to end up. What I do know is that we are being robbed blind. We are being killed off at a rate I can't believe. I saw here, it's been about 2 months ago on C-SPAN, at one of the actuaries aerials for Social Security, is holding up graphs. And in relation to the vaccines, Allison, she's talking about our fertility rate in this country is down to 40% of what it was 10 years ago. I don't know why. Well, geez, you kicked up the vaccine schedule. What could be the problem? Then she said, and look at the mortality rate in the elderly. It's spiking. It's through the roof. So I started looking, and that's when I first discovered the statistics on Medicare deaths, Health and Human Services. In 2010, 2.2 million elderly people died on Medicare, but nobody said anything. And of those 2.2 million people, over 800,000 of them were in hospice, supposedly terminally ill, and died. Hospice, which used to be the Good Samaritan, is the Grim Reaper. You have the right to refuse hospice, unless, of course, you're guardianized, and then you have no rights at all. And with now we have these bills coming out following hospice example, where we're going to starve the mentally ill and people with dementia to death. I don't know what it's going to take for you to get a clue. They passed this bill out in Oregon. It's HB 4135. And it says a person who appoints a healthcare representative but makes no decisions regarding end-of-life care. This got changed in the bill. This is regardless of your decisions for end-of-life care. This is regardless of what they call a living will, where people are saying, if, you know, it gets to this point, pull the plug, or if even if I'm this sick, I still want you to continue care. You know, I want every chance I can be given. This is, again, thrown out the window. Would be granting his or her health care representative, that guardian, the power to make a life-ending decision for the principal. They would have the power to remove access to food and water. This is hospice. This is their method of operation. Even when the principal is not in one of the four statutorily defined end-of-life situations, and even if this is not the will of the principal. Do you understand what this bill says? That people you don't know can arbitrarily decide to starve and dehydrate you to damn death, and it is an excruciatingly painful death. This is one of the most inhumane things I think I have ever seen come out anywhere, is what we are now willing to do to others in society and act as if this is somehow moral or death with dignity or somehow, some merciful thing we're doing. We treat prisoners in prison with more mercy than we are treating the elderly that we are ending the lives of. I want you to imagine your grandma, your grandpa, your mom, your dad in one of these institutions and watching as they withhold food and water. What happens to them? It is an excruciating, terrible, terrible death. At least in prison, if they'd have robbed a bank and killed somebody, it would have taken about 7 minutes. This can take several days to a week. While you're going through this process and watching mom, dad, or whomever go through this torture, they drug them up so that they can't cry out. They can't cry for help. They can't express pain. And then they just simply pull the plug. They end all life support. They end everything. And the person just dies. What the hell is wrong with us, people? What the hell is wrong with us that we would even consider a bill like this, much less to see it get passed? What is wrong with us? I mean, how apathetic do y'all have to be out there? Go ahead, because I'm pissed.
I think from just talking to different people, they don't think it will happen to them. They don't think it will happen to their family. So they don't concern themselves with this sort of thing. And the reality is every day we're getting older. Like, you know, we're all going to be senior citizens. We're all going to be, you know, like, don't reap what we sow. Like, don't not care and then get to your old age and let yourself live this nightmare. I just really, really think people don't believe it will happen to them. And now, you know, here we're hearing the first story in Wisconsin, you know, everyone, oh, Wisconsin's a great state. And now here's this first story. My sister used to joke, I'm retiring in Wisconsin, you know, and now maybe not. I think that's the apathy. It will not happen to them. And so until it does, and until it happens to your family member, and, you know, had it not happened to my family member, I might have been just as guilty. I don't know that it happened to my family member. And Allison and I have known each other. Like, she knows that when I say it happened to my family members, she believed me. She believed my story. And when she saw and heard that it was happening to a complete stranger in Wisconsin, she remembered my story. And she's like, you know what? I remember this story. And I remember, you know, I don't think Kaz is crazy. I know her. And here we are talking about it because it really does happen. And I just think people think it's conspiracy theory. People don't believe that it's real. I just think, and
Kaz,
they just write it off.
Excuse me. They're spraying here. Monsanto just will not quit. But excuse me, please. When I first started in this, of course, was the Sarah Harvey story.
Yes.
And when I interviewed her, I came away from that thinking, you must have done something wrong. This couldn't happen. Not here. And you're absolutely right. People think it can't happen to them. It won't happen to them. We have these estate plans. We got everything taken care of. It won't happen to us. And when it does, they go into shock.
Well, it's the same thing for the vaccines. I mean, you know, a lot of people look at you like, what? I mean, I had all my vaccines. I'm fine. You know what I mean? It's the same. We face the same problem in the vaccine world trying to wake people up because, oh, their kid had their 12 shots and they're fine. But now the schedule is up to 72 doses. Next year it'll be 75.
Yes.
There's 270 mm-hmm. vaccines in the pipeline. I mean, that's why an organization like Wisconsin United for Freedom is so important because we all need to get together. Like I wore my T-shirt the other day from the rally and someone came up to me and said, hey, what do you mean by freedom? And I said, you know what? Thank you for asking me. I think the first thing that freedom means to me is hands off my body. You know, and it's whether it's vaccines or you want to treat me for something or, you know, we've got kids that are being forced to go through chemotherapy that their parents have already healed them with vitamin D17 and vitamin C and baking soda. I mean, it's just, there's so many natural ways to take care of our bodies and to cure these diseases that we're turning away from the big pharma and big pharma does not like that, but we have to keep talking to people and saying, yes, hands off my body. Hands off my rainwater, hands off my raw milk, hands off my marijuana, whatever it may be. But we have to figure out a way that we can talk to each other and unite as one because we have to advocate for ourselves and our children and our parents and our grandparents, and we have to be able to take it to the legislature. Now, I know Minnesota, when they brought up legislation to remove the exemptions to vaccinations, Minnesota was able to shut that down immediately. And the only way that was shut down is because people went to the courthouse and spoke up. And that's what we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
We have to realize the only way that these politicians are going to hear our voice is if our voices are louder than the pharmaceutical lobbyists and the medical lobbyists and the hospital lobbyists, all the people that are making money from the organ harvesting or the euthanizing or the, you know, vaccinating. We have to be louder than them. But we have to do it in a way with love. We can't go in there looking angry. We can't go in there looking like we're, we have to be informed. We have to do it with love. We have to do it politely, but we have to be persistent. We can't just expect to do it once and we're done. This is, you know, when you look at Texans for Vaccine Choice, they are very organized. They're very effective. They had a legislature that brought up, removing their exemptions, and they went and they lobbied and they lobbied and they lobbied and they shut it down. And then the author of the bill, they went to his district and they ran another candidate. And even though their candidate, the vaccine injury awareness candidate, lost, it was enough to scare the politician to realize if they brought up legislation to remove a parent's right to informed consent, it would be political suicide. And that's what we need to do. And
yes.
I keep telling that to people in this movement is you are not going to do anything by making a post on Facebook. You have to take this where the action is, which is politics, which is why I got really involved with helping Mike McCabe run for governor in Wisconsin in 2018 because Mike McCabe was the only candidate running that was refusing any super PAC money, any corporate money, and he would not accept any money beyond $200, even from a wealthy individual donor. Those are the type of people that we have to get behind and volunteer and get politically active, because that's how we make changes. That's how we raise our voices. And so that's what we need to do. We need to go to the Capitol. Do you know who your legislators are? Do you know who your representative is in Wisconsin? Do you know who your representative is in at the federal level? You have to know every person that's representing you at the Capitol, both at the Washington D.C. Capitol and the state of Wisconsin Capitol. And you need to know them by their first name. You need to know their staffers. That you need to have them on speed dial. That's the only way we can make change, is being citizen lobbyists.
Okay, and I want to say something that has been brought up here recently again, and I've talked about this before also, and it's a little thing that especially D.C. does, but you'll find it in your state. It's quite prolific also, and it's called zipping. And what it is if you contact a senator or representative, either state or federal, about a bill they're sponsoring or supporting, or that some position they're taking on something that's coming up for a vote, and you send them an email to their, office and say, I realize this is your position and this is my position, and could you please tell me why you are supporting this bill, because I really don't understand. What's your zip code? What difference does it make? Out of professional courtesy, congressional courtesy, I don't talk to people out of other districts because, it's just it's a courtesy to other legislators. Okay, Mr. Hotshot, we didn't elect you to represent Congress. We elected you to represent us. You simply represent a district or a state. Okay, but you're supposed to be speaking for us. I happen to be in this state, and if it's someone who's legislating within the state, I have sent them letters saying, since you insist on adopting this attitude that you can't speak to anyone outside your zip code, then please issue a voting statement that says, because I refuse to speak to anyone outside of my district about this issue, my vote and its effect on the public is confined only to those people in my district. It affects no one else. And I had a representative from D.C. call me and said, what does this mean? I said, during the Bush-Cheney crime syndicate, every time Congress passed a law that limited Bush's power, he would sign it, and then he would issue what he called a signing statement that instructed all of his cabinet members not to abide by the bill. And I said, and they didn't, because they were under presidential order. So I'm telling you, you need to do the same thing. If you cannot speak to me about an issue that's going to directly affect me, whether it is federal or state, because I don't have the same zip code you do, or I'm not in the same state that you are, then you issue a voting statement that your vote applies only to the people in your state or only to the people in your district, and it has no effect on anyone outside of that. Now, we know it can be done. We've seen a president do it. These people have no right to refuse to speak to us on any level. They are representatives of us. They work for us. We do not work for them. And they are obligated to communicate with us. This thing of, you're not in my district. I don't care. I don't care.
Well, Marty, I'll just add a statement. Yeah, I'll add a comment to that. We've been visiting the legislators in Wisconsin, and someone said to me, is it okay if I go and talk to this legislator? I said, if there are lobbyists that are walking around this Capitol, that are visiting your legislator, they don't live in their district. There's doctors walking around in white coats that are going into every single legislator's office. They don't care whether they live in their district. So if a lobbyist from the medical establishment can do it, or a lobbyist from the pharmaceutical industry can do it, which last year, Big Pharma outspent oil and gas. They spent almost $28 million on lobbying, and that's only what we know of. That doesn't include the dark money.
Yes.
So if they can go out there and they can lobby our legislators that are supposed to represent us, and they're not asking them for their zip code, they have no right to ask me. So that's what I would say is, yeah, I don't like the zipping.
Yes.
Because you don't ask the lobbyist what zip code they're in. You shouldn't ask me. I'm a citizen lobbyist.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. There you go. You're a citizen lobbyist. Good for you. Good for you.
Yep.
Okay, we got one last thing I want to touch on here in this last
awesome.
Half hour, and that is organ donation. Now, New York is in the process of trying to pass a bill that makes everyone a mandatory organ donator. I had a shock here recently. We had Dr. Paul Byrne on the show. On the hospice show, who explained in detail the fact that organs can be harvested only from a living human being. And he explained how this definition of brain death is a contrivance, who came up with it, and that they have to give these patients that they're going to do vivisection on, and that's what this is, vivisection. They dissect them alive. They give them, and I cannot say this word, propofol, whatever that stuff is. It paralyzes them. It is exactly what we give prisoners on death row. It paralyzes them. They cannot respond on any level, make any noise, move a muscle, express anything. And they dissect them alive. He said they remove their organs while these people are conscious. They cannot be given anesthetic or the organ is unusable. I almost passed out when he was talking about this. Was just almost more than I could grasp. And he said they give them this propofol because, he said, they have had people that they started this dissection on and began moving that actually cried out, that reached up and tried to grab their arm and stop them. And it's so that they don't have to put up with that. That's such a nuisance when they do that. But I studied, did some research on that too, and many people will not participate in organ harvesting because the people are alive, and they said even paralyzed with this paralytic drug, that the tears will roll out of their eyes as they are being sliced up. And go back again to what this one victim in guardianship is worth and why, if you come into any system at all, you go to the Commerce Committee. As an individual, you may have a worth, let's say, of $50,000. You might be worth $50,000. As a organ donator, you can be worth over $250,000. I nearly passed out. I did more research. I found out that people, the darker the skin tone, the more viable the organ is for transplant. And that brought me back to Libya when we tore that country up for God knows what reason. And they started crating up the Libyans and selling them as slaves. But then they were also taking particularly young men between the ages of 15 and 25 who were particularly dark-skinned, and they were selling them in lots to buyers that they bragged were coming from all over the world for organ harvesting. And nobody said a freaking word. I didn't hear one word globally about what the hell are you doing. They were bragging about all the buyers they had, about all the money that was to be made. They showed these people being put into these cages, maybe 15, 20 at a time, and sold in lots. What is wrong with us? What is wrong with us? go to New York. They're going to try to make everybody an organ donor. 42% of New York's population is black. Guess who's going to be on that table? Guess who is going to be the first ones on that table? The other thing is your driver's license. It says, you know, when you apply for that, it says, do you want to be an organ donor? And no. But it just says, I would like to be an organ donor. And you check that if you want to be, that there's no option to say, no, I don't want to be. If, because there is no option, no matter what back of that card says, you are considered an organ donor. Unless you file a specific card with the DMV that says you are not to be used for organ donation. Otherwise, in every state, you are considered a voluntary organ donor, whether you check the box or you don't. So think about that next time you get your driver's license. I just, and the other question that comes to my mind with this is, what is going on that we need so many transplanted organs? What is happening to the world's population that so many kidneys and hearts and livers and God knows what else, even brains, as I understand, they're trying to transplant. Of course, I know some people that could use that one. But anyway, what is happening that there is such a need for organs? Let's move to dialysis. Black people are 3 times more likely to suffer from renal disease than people of other races. This is a direct effect of food, what's in the food, and from vaccines and medications. Dialysis is the only fully funded medical program in the country. We have approximately 800,000 people on dialysis at any given time. The dialysis clinics are owned by the nephrologist. There's no oversight. The labs are owned by the nephrologist. And if you go into one of these clinics and you complain like, hey, wait a minute, this machine isn't clean. This chair hasn't been cleaned. There's blood on it. Or, hey, wait a minute, you're being a little rough there. Any person can go into your file, and it's called character assassination, and make a negative comment about you, and you cannot see what that comment was nor who made it, and you are involuntarily ejected from the clinic, and you can't get in another one. Now, why would you do that if you're making money off these people? Because in the clinic, you're only worth about $200,000 to $250,000 a year. But that same nephrologist in the emergency room can make up to $1 million off of you by throwing you out of the clinic. Get it? They're being handed a death sentence. Now, Arlene, who hosts that show, has accumulated over 20 years more than 80,000 documents, and she can show statistically that 90% of the people who get involuntarily ejected from dialysis clinics are black. I wonder what's going on there. And they all end up in a year dead. Yeah. And I don't know. And now we're finding out these aborted babies are actually many times being kept alive for not only organ transplantations, but for vaccine development and various other little things.
Wouldn't that be better if they were like 9 months, you know, almost full term? Like the bigger the baby, the better that's going to be for them.
Yes, yeah, because everything's fully developed. Yes. Mm-hmm. Why else would you approve full term abortion? Why would you approve? This is murder. I can't agree with abortion on any level. I truly can't. But that's me. But a full-term baby, and the mother can decide or the doctor can decide, boom. That's murder. Is that not murder? Allison, they kill your child with a vaccine, or basically steal their life from them, injuring them so badly. Is that not also a murder? You murdered their life. They're never going to be.
Yeah, Robert Kennedy Jr. talks about the pharmaceutical industry. They have a homicidal agenda. I mean, they are committing murder. They know it. You know, I mean, there's SIDS.
Yeah.
The doctors are not allowed to put on the, you know, autopsy certificate that it was caused by the vaccine, even though we know all the toxic ingredients are in the brain and it shut down the hippocampus and all they stop breathing. I mean, and if it happens in a child over 12 months of age, they call it SUDS, S-U-D-C. I mean, it's just beyond ridiculous. These are lethal injections.
Yeah.
We know it. They know it. But they have an agenda, and it's not going to stop. I mean, unless enough people rise up and we reach a critical tipping point, and it's the same with the organ donation. I mean, what's happening, that's a very egregious agenda by the medical establishment to make money off our bodies. And so the whole medical freedom thing is hands off my body. You can't have my organs. You can't. It's medical rape. I mean, let's be honest. This whole Me Too movement, you know, I mean, Me Too. Well, what about medical rape? What about going, you know, you're going to the doctor's office and how you're treated? I mean, we send our kids to school and we're teaching them not to bully, but yet what happens when you go to the doctor's office? That's all they do is bully you and force you and coerce you into making a decision that you don't feel comfortable doing, whether you're a pregnant woman and you feel vulnerable because you're pregnant and they're telling you to get a vaccination, or you've got this newborn baby and it's at the hospital and the baby's not even 24 hours old yet, and they come at you with a vaccination. Well, first of all, the vitamin K shot, which I unfortunately agree to that at the hospital, but that has a black box warning. It's completely unnecessary.
Yes.
Newborns do not produce vitamin K for a reason until the 8th day of life. So, and they don't have a functioning liver or kidneys to remove the toxins that are in the vaccination. And they,
Why does it contain 50% aluminum adjuvant? Vitamin K, why would it need 50% aluminum adjuvant added to it?
Well, the aluminum, I know for a fact that the only reason aluminum is in a vaccination for a normal vaccination with antigens is the pharmaceutical industry. The antigens are very expensive, and they don't put enough antigen in the vaccination to make it actually have an immune response in the body. So they put the aluminum in there to force your body to have the immune response. So the aluminum is in there because it's a way for Big Pharma to cut corners and save money. So it's got to be the same reason why it's in the vitamin K shot. Yeah.
Aluminum shuts your immune system down so that your body does not fight that vaccine off as the infection it is.
Gotcha.
That is exactly what that aluminum does. And it also immediately crosses the blood-brain barrier and collects in the brain. Gee, I wonder why we got so many cases of autism.
Wow.
Exactly. Or Alzheimer's in elderly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
It used to be an elderly person. Elderly person was known to be so wise. And it's been about 150 years now, and that's pretty much when aluminum started to come into people's diets more. That's not the case anymore. Everyone's like, you know, you get old and you lose your mind. But that used to not be the case. If you go back and you read history and read books, the old person was the wise sage. Why is that not anymore?
Yep. I'll tell you.
Because they're on pharmaceutical drugs. That too.
And there's a reason for that. And that is to get rid of generational knowledge. You've seen all this stuff going on where they're trying to erase our history. You know, they're taking down this statue because it represents this, and they're taking that one because it represents this is our history, whether you like it or you don't. But what your elderly can tell you is that they know they have a lot of knowledge that they can pass down, and they remember what it was like before things got this crazy, and they don't want you telling your grandchildren this. You might get wild ideas, and they want rid of that. They want rid of that. That generational knowledge, that passing down of things your grandparents, your parents learned from experience, from living, from actually doing and learning, they don't want, they want you to know only what they teach you in school, which is little to nothing. These kids come out of school, they can barely read at a sixth grade level. It's absolutely disgusting. When you, you know, you talk about the doctors, you know, saying, oh, you need this and you need that. A recent visit, actually this last year, I rarely, but occasionally go to the doctor. And my doctor said to me, well, I'm going to prescribe this. And I said, no, don't do that because I'm not taking any of that. And she says, I just don't understand. People come to me and they want me to fix them and then they won't take the medications I give them. I said, no, we just need you to tell us what's wrong. We'll go home and fix it naturally. And which pissed her off. As I was getting to leave, I got to the door and she said, well, she said, I see you're still smoking. And I turned around and said, yes, and I see you're still handing out medications and vaccines that either kill people or make them permanently sick. See how that works? I can let them kill me or I can do it. And I said, by the way, I happen to know you smoke too. And so I left. But this is the thing. People are turning to natural medicine. And natural, that's why this stuff is so popular. And what we have seen with the elderly people, many people that have what they call dementia are severely deficient in B12, but they won't give them B12. They'll give them Ativan. You know, they'll give them Haldol, but they'll give them they won't give them B12, an infusion of B12. When your B12 level drops, it affects your memory. It affects your brain. So if you have an elderly person who seems to have, you know, moments where they're just not quite there or they can't, you know, constant problems trying to recall and remember, try liquid B12 first. You can get injections at your doctor's office, but they're going to want to immediately put them on one of these medications. So I don't advise that, but that's my opinion. And but get B12 and begin giving them B12. And give it about 2 weeks and see if you don't see an improvement. They know with Alzheimer's, again, B12 severely deficient if there at all. But they don't give B12 shots.
Well, this is what they did to Harvey. We have all the medical records. They took him off the B and put him on Haldol, 5 milligrams.
Yes.
Got him right where they wanted him.
And he got worse, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, Marty, he's just getting old. Yeah, that was the good care that he got.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
yes.
You know, back to Wisconsin. You know, back to Wisconsin, we were trying to move. We were going to move Harvey out of Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. We had, I had put the money down to hold a spot here in Madison, and it was actually a social worker that I talked to that told me, are you, you know, when we were talking about the 5 milligrams of Haldol, and she said, that's called a chemical restraint. It was a Dane County social worker who actually was so helpful to me. And it makes me sad to think that something bad is brewing in Wisconsin, because it was a Dane County social worker who told me what a chemical restraint was and the 5 milligrams of Haldol. And then when I wrote to my Senator Tammy Baldwin, obviously, this whole situation is happening in Pennsylvania. She can't do anything, but I was advised, figure out how to get this federal. And that was, go file Medicare fraud, go file, you know. And that's where a lot of good advice came from some of our elected officials and government employees here in Wisconsin. But, you know, that was a good probably 6-7 years ago. And I'm worried that it's not that anymore, having heard the story that just happened in Portage County, which is like 45-minute drive from my house. It's our backyard, Allison, Portage. We know where that is. And this just happened in Wisconsin, the state doing this. How fast can change.
I would suggest that you, if they haven't closed down public records, begin checking in your county courthouses, the number of probate cases, guardianship cases, see how many are on file. Go ask them. If a lot of times these clerks of court or whatever they want to call those fools are real militant, but you have a right to view those files. They are public files. Now, we have states that are now moving to seal those files so the public can't see them, because too many people were getting information and seeing this clear-cut pattern of racketeering between these judges, these hearing examiners, the attorneys, the same guardians and attorneys, the same APS agent, same social worker, the same hospital, the same doctors, the same nursing homes, over and over and over again, and people were showing collusion and conspiracy to defraud. And so a lot of them started, they claim HIPAA. Understand something about HIPAA. HIPAA is not patient privacy. This is to protect the medical field from malpractice, medical abuse claims, misdiagnosis, mistakes they made, and it is to protect the insurance company from having to pay out. And besides, if you're under guardianship, excuse me, you don't have any identity, so why should it be a problem for me to see the file, your medical file? You gave my identity to that stinking predator guardian.
Mm-hmm.
So whose privacy are you protecting here? But the insurance company can see your file. Your doctor's office can see your file. The attorney can see your file. The probate examiner can see your file. But you can't. Now, who is it they're protecting? HIPAA is not there to protect patient privacy. It has nothing. It's another one of those bills with one of those warm, fuzzy-sounding names that that's another case of get the Vaseline and bend over it. This is going to hurt. It is just, I don't know. Allison, I agree with you. People need to show up. And, yes, we did get that shut down here in Minnesota on that mandatory vaccine thing. And I also agree with you that if you're going to keep people out of school on the basis of vaccination, keep out those children who got the vaccines because they are walking incubators with all the stuff they were infected with. They are a threat to public health. And
they are
a threat to children.
Yep.
Whose parents had enough sense not to have them infected like this. People understand vaccinations are intentional infections, and you have no clue what the hell is in there, what they just did. Do you know, quickly, up here in the Midwest during the 1950s, Minnesota, the Dakotas, Iowa, I can remember, I'm dating myself here, I can remember getting free milk at lunch. And it was Borden's milk. And so you brought a sack lunch and you went by the thing and got you a little carton of milk. It was free. And then one day I ran by and got my carton of milk and went and sat down. And this girl came over to me. And I remember it because it just embarrassed me so badly. She said, "That's a nickel." And I said, "No, these are free." And she said, "Not anymore. That's a nickel." And I had to give the milk back because I didn't have a nickel. And that always kind of bugged me. Here about 5 years ago on PBS, they ran a documentary, which they have been unable to provide me a copy of since, about how during that time up here in the Midwest, they gave away free milk in the elementary schools all across these states that were salted with live and dead viruses, all kinds of crap, and they have been tracking us all these years to see where clusters of disease showed up, what kind of disease showed up. I have a girlfriend in St. Cloud who showed up with a Australian eye infection, an eye disease. She's never been out of St. Cloud. And it turns out to be one of the viruses that was added into this. But this is what I'm saying. They have been watching this area. Up in this area, we have a large concentration of blood research centers. They're all over the place. Why? And they have tracked our movement as we've moved out of the state to other places. And they always want to know, where did you grow up? Allison, you mentioned something else I want to touch on, too. Biologics. When you go into the hospital, and that admission form, do not sign.
Thank you.
They got that computer monitor. You make them print that admission form off and sign the hard copy. And you go in there, and it will say that I give permission for biologics to be used, exactly what you said. This includes vaccines. Even if you have a prohibition on there, you have a statement on file, no vaccines at any time of any kind. If that word biologics is in there and you don't cross that out and say, I do not agree to this, they can administer vaccines. They can administer experimental blood. They can do all kinds of things to you. Biologics is not the same as medication or medical treatment.
That's right. We've got nurses that have come forward that say that there are patients in the OR that there are standing orders to give these patients while they're under anesthesia any vaccines that are on their record that they have not received yet. So you sign that hospital admission form. You have no idea what's being done to you under anesthesia. You're in the operating room,
right,
in the OR, and you are being vaccinated for the flu, the pneumonia, the DTaP, you name it. But the one positive thing I do want to say is that this type of legislation to remove our right to informed consent, and for school-age children, but this is happening. They want to let it be known. They want to vaccinate everybody, especially adults. There's way more adults in this country than there are children. This is all about making money. So
yes,
if you're an adult, and even if you don't have kids, you may not be worried about your kids getting vaccinated to go to school, but this isn't about the kids. This is about your driver's license. This is about your passport. This is about your future insurance.
Yes.
If you don't want to lose your rights to make the informed decision of whether you want to be injected or not, you better stand up now. And the state of Washington,
yes,
I think it was Washington, this is happening in California, Florida, Iowa, Illinois, Ohio,
yep,
New York, Maine, Vermont, everywhere. And there so many people show up to the courthouse, I think it was in Washington, that the legislators were so informed, the constituents and the citizen lobbyists brought so much information to them that they all got together as legislators and said, you know what, we're not going to try and remove the parental right or the informed consent. What we're going to do is we're going to get together and sign a resolution and send it to D.C. that we need to repeal the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. So if people need to realize,
yeah,
that, yes, you can make a difference. If you bull rush that Capitol and go talk to your legislators, you can change hearts and minds. You can.
Well, and the other thing that you do, too, is it exposes them, and the last thing they want is to be exposed for moving against you. And when they're out there telling this stuff and telling all of these stories about, you know, it's for the public good and it's all about the children, it's about the children, and you bring them this evidence that shows it has nothing to do with the children. This has to do with money. And how much money,
yep,
did you take from these people to push this bill forward? The last thing, the days, this is what the internet has done and why they want so bad to censor it. The days of politicians being able to lie to the camera and get away with it for 20, 30 years is over.
Yeah.
You tell a lie now, we know it within 30 seconds. And so they don't want to get caught like this. I always tell people, go to opensecrets.org, type your favorite politician in there, click the money trail tab, and it will tell you all the money they've taken from who. All these lobbyists you talked about, Allison, from whom? And you have to handle it this way. And this will tell you who you're up against. And numbers count. And as we've said many times before, it's great, you know, click and like and share and promoting things, but you have got to stand up at some point and be counted. You have got to stand up and be counted. Now, I had a lot of people approach me, and I'm going to tell you now, I'm not interested in any stupid wannabe celebrity or movie star, or I'm the savior of the whole world, and it's only me, only I can help you. Take your crap and move on somewhere else. I'm interested in people that can work together and get something done. And if you're into
agreed,
you get a hold of me. And Allison, I'm glad you were on tonight, because you didn't hardly get to say two words, but I think you got in there.
So, I found the great guest. Wow. I learned a lot.
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
Yes, you did. And this show is all thanks to you. You set this up. Yes, you did.
Well,
90
thank you, Marty.
Seconds,
thanks
girls,
for having me.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. This was fun.
And don't think this is a one-time thing. You're coming back. And Kaz, I'll be back with you again this next week. Everybody, we had a massive audience. I got a ton of messages. I'm over 70 here, I can see. I'll get to you as quickly as I can after the show and respond to you. Thank you all for tuning in. This has just been a tremendous show, and I enjoyed it. Everybody, I want to remind you of the Whistleblower Summit taking place in Washington, D.C., July 29th, 30th, and 31st. And there's going to be some new announcements about that coming out very shortly this week that I'm excited about, but that's not my announcement, so I'm not going to do it. Anyway, we'll see y'all next week. Kaz, thank you so much. Allison, thank you for being our guest. And good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.